Welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. We're now shifting our focus over to the energy sector, oil and natural gas, as we are chatting with Dan Steffens. Dan is the president of the Energy Perspectives Group. We bring Dan on every month to get an update on the oil and gas prices, as well as any of the underlying stocks that he sees as having a good setup, a good opportunity for investors to enter. Let's start off, Dan, real quick with the energy prices. Oil, natural gas, both have been under quite a bit of pressure. It was early this month where I think tariff fears, they even crept into these markets as oil went through a pretty major drop earlier this month. Beginning of April, it was over $70 a barrel. We got Liberation Day, all the tariff news, and oil dropped as low as the mid-50s. Now it's rebounded. It's in the low 60s, but still, oil is under pressure. Nat gas also under pressure. It's been going almost straight down this whole month, but peaked early in March as well. So, Dan, let's start off with oil, I guess, and natural gas. In your eyes, is this all just geopolitics and tariff wars that are drawing the energy prices lower?
No, I mean, there's some fundamentals, but I would say the fear of the tariff wars and fear of drill, baby, drill have been, you know, a cloud over the oil market and just the uncertainty with those things. Now, I do think the fear of drill, baby, drill is pretty much faded away. And I was saying from day one, there's no way these upstream companies are going to go out and drill, baby, drill to lower the price of their product. They're not going to do it. And if any of these public companies start using debt to drill, baby, drill, they will be crushed in the market. So they're not going to do it. And actually, a lot of them have just recently, when the oil dipped to 60, announced that they were cutting back on their drilling program. So you're going to see the reverse. We're not going to have a surge in production. I actually think U.S. oil production has peaked, if not already, very, very close. And the data is just starting to show up on that. Now, the tariff wars, I don't know. My personal feeling is this is all part of negotiation, Trump's negotiation, and maybe, just maybe, he did it in April because, you know, there is seasonal demand for oil goes up and down. So you have space heating demand goes down for home heating oil. And you really haven't had the pickup in transportation until you start getting, till the kids get out of school at the end of May. So you got that. And he wanted to did something to pull down gasoline prices a little bit. But we need the Canadian oil. We need the Canadian gas. Well, I don't think there's going to ever be tariffs on Canadian oil and gas, but, you know, we'll see. I don't know. Then OPEC Plus comes out really the same day he announces the tariff thing. OPEC Plus comes out and says they're going to accelerate and make, instead of doing these 140,000 barrel a day increases month after month, they're going to move three of them into May. So they're tripling the amount they're bringing in May. And part of that was just to balance out because there was countries that were cheating already. So it's not going to bring that much more physical oil to the market anyway. But it's another concern, you know, what's OPEC Plus going to do? And then, of course, you got the uncertainty. You know, we kick Chevron out of Venezuela. That takes 200,000 barrels a day off the market. You got, what the hell are we going to do about Iran? I think Israel's chomping at the bit to, you know, bomb their nuclear facilities because they cannot allow them to get a nuke. And, you know, what's going to be the resolution of the Ukraine war? You know, we have a ceasefire, then we don't have a ceasefire. So what's going to happen there? And of course, obviously, China's demand. But, you know, China knows they need the U.S. market. We know we need the China's stuff. And so I think that gets resolved. Now, natural gas, to me, is not as impacted by this geopolitical stuff as the oil market is. So this is the year where the gas producers are really in favor again. And so what's happened recently to the natural gas price just in the last couple of weeks is that the paper traders, the people that are trading the NYMEX futures contracts, got real bullish. So they went too long. They were overextended on the May contract, which is the one that's just now closing. And they cannot take physical delivery of the oil. So they have to close those contracts, take the losses, and, you know, roll those forward. So that's what caused the May front month to go down. But if you look at the strip, look out further on the strip, the NYMEX contracts for December 25 and January of 26. Today, this morning, we're trading at December was 443 and January was 471. Then EIA, just a few days ago, on April 10th, they increased their forecast for natural gas prices to $4.30 average for 2025. So we're already, you know, a third of the way through 2025. So 4.30 average, which means we're going to have to get up to 4.50 or something by the end of the year. And they increased their forecast for 2026 to 4.60. Well, I can tell you, if natural gas prices average 4.60, I got a list of companies that are going to be making a fortune, because their lifting cost for some of these, Range announced their first quarter results, and their all cash lifting costs are only like a dollar. So they would have over $3 profit per MCF. And this is a company that produces 2 billion cubic feet a day. So, you know, there's some big gas producers, EQT, Range Resources, Antero. They would be printing money at $4 gas. So that's just something to consider.
Well, Dan, you laid a lot out there. I was going to get into nat gas with you. Let's also bring into the equation that there's still a hesitancy from a lot of energy traders that nat gas does get into the mid-fours, as you just laid out. So, you know, beyond just the energy need for more nat gas power plants, there's the seasonality factor, but there's also the LNG export terminals, and we've given that a lot of airtime, but rightly so. This is starting to ramp up more and more as this year goes by and as we round into 2026. So by wintertime, let's just say that we are starting to creep up from the 3 range right now up into the 4s. Is it possible that if nat gas is in the 4s or 5s, that a lot of investors in the nat gas stocks are going to miss the window because they simply don't believe it's going that high?
Yeah, they might. And I think the companies kind of learned a lesson in the run-up in 2022. You know, in August 2022, when it became clear we weren't going to be able to fill storage before the next winter arrived, the natural gas price in the U.S. spiked to $9.30. I think there's still a chance we're going to see a bidding war like that. And that's caused by a bidding war between the LNG exporters and the utilities that bring gas to your home or business. And they get out into the futures market and they start bidding up the front month contracts because they want to take the physical supply of that gas and put it in storage for themselves. And I think there's still a chance to have, but maybe not. Maybe they get enough in storage. But right now, as of today, our storage is below the 5-year average. And keep in mind that the U.S. and Canadian gas markets have grown significantly in the last 5 years. The demand for U.S. gas is growing at 3 or 4 times the rate that demand for U.S. oil is growing. Our global demand for oil is growing. And, you know, it's the clean fossil fuel. It's the only answer for electricity. You're not going to be able to build dozens and dozens of nuclear power plants in the next year or two. And these AI data centers are desperate to secure gas supply to build their own gas-fired power plants. I just saw Range Resources talking that today, that they're entering into a joint venture with somebody to build gas-fired power plants inside Appalachia, inside Pennsylvania, so they don't have to ship the gas out. They can just burn it right there to produce electricity and then ship that electricity to the AI data centers in Virginia or wherever they are. And anyway, it's a problem. And I think that problem, that electricity problem, the only near-term solution is natural gas. And that's really one of the main reasons I'm bullish on natural gas.
All right. So, Dan, sounds like you are still bullish. Oil, natural gas, broadly, you do see opportunities here. Let's talk about some of the companies that you want to bring up that you sent over to us. The first being Hemisphere Energy, traded HME. Like, this is more a Canadian junior upstream oil and gas company. We've had Hemisphere on the show a couple times. I believe this is more or less a growth story, but take us through what you like about Hemisphere and it's really your forecast for it.
Well, Hemisphere really is kind of a one asset company. And so you got that risk, but it's heavy oil in an area they call Attlee Buffalo. And they've successfully changed 2 water floods. They call it the G pool and the F pool, but they're separate pools of oil. And they started injecting polymers to thicken the water and push more. And it's been very successful in both pools. So they have like tripled the production at Attlee Buffalo, but the G pool is fully developed and the F pool only has a few more drilling locations and then that will be fully developed. So the only criticism I had about Hemisphere was that it didn't have enough running room. They had nothing beyond Attlee Buffalo. And he, you know, I kept talking to Don Simmons, the CEO. They were looking at this deal, that deal, this deal, that, and they're not closing anything. And finally, they did. They've closed a deal called Marston. It's right on the border between Eastern Alberta and Saskatchewan. And they started a pilot project. They have five horizontal wells. One, three, and five are producers, and two and four are injection wells. And they've been injecting polymers for several months, maybe not 4 or 5 months. And it takes quite a while before you really have confidence that the polymer flood is going to work. But if that works, Marston is significantly larger than Atlee Buffalo, and it could quickly ramp up to, you know, really double their production within a few years. Now, the company is extremely cash flow positive, and especially now this time of the year, they never have done drilling during the breakup phase when the weather's, you know, it's mushy, the ground's mushy, you can't move rigs around and stuff like that. So they will not start their drilling program until June this year. And as a result, because the wells in these polymer floods keep ramping up, even though they didn't complete any new wells in the fourth quarter, their production increased going into this year because the polymer floods are working. And they're up to over 4,000 barrels a day now, I think, or close to it. And I think it's going to plateau at about four. But the question I get, and I'm sure you've gotten, is are their dividends sustainable? Because they currently have a dividend yield of like 9.3%. They pay quarterly dividends of 2.5 cents Canadian per quarter. And then twice a year, about every 6 months, they announce a special dividend of 3 cents. The balance sheet is in pristine condition. They have no long-term debt, no interest-bearing debt, and they are generating a lot of cash flow. Now, another reason, because they're not going to be doing much drilling in the first half of the year, their capital spending is going to be much lower, 5 or 6 million barrel dollars lower this year than in 2024. And so they'll actually have as much or more operating cash flow to pay dividends, you know, through this year. Now, if Marston doesn't work and, you know, they don't have anything else coming on, then eventually Atlee Buffalo will start going on decline. But I've talked to him several times. He's constantly telling me they're looking at new deals all the time. So we'll see.
Well, Dan, let me just piggyback on that last point about the new deals, because we were on their case for the longest time that they should make an acquisition, you know, years ago, and they finally did. And this new land package at Marston, you know, they're going to do the same technique they did with the polymer floods. I think at Atlee, they did water floods followed by polymer floods. And then they got that delayed gratification where, like, as you say, the run rates stay pretty steady, and it's kind of a delayed gratification on those polymer floods. But when you see a company like this that's paying a nice dividend, you say it's sustainable based on their capital spend, you see that they've got nice growth, they're going to be drilling. Shouldn't they keep pressing the bet with acquisitions? Would you like to see a company like Hemisphere even go out and acquire something else, especially while oil prices are depriced? Is this a good window for a company like Hemisphere or some of the other profitable juniors to go out and mass up a little bit more?
Yeah, actually, if you're going out to make acquisitions, you're at an advantage if you have the cash in a depressed price market, right? Because the sellers have no leverage then. You know, if you got guys that have to make a sale because they have bank debt due or something, this is the time to go out and do it. I like what InPlay Oil did. They made a very nice acquisition that almost doubled their production, and it's another one that's in our high yield income portfolio. But now they're not saying much about Marston, but reading between the lines when I talk to Don, I know he's very bullish on the project. And it will require quite a bit of capital to develop, but I think they can do it at a pace where they can keep paying their dividends and, you know, add another 5, 6, 10 wells a year because they're done with Atlee Buffalo. See, they've been drilling 9 or 10 wells a year at Atlee Buffalo, these horizontal wells. And they'll just switch that over to Marston, and man, then they may have like 10 years of drilling inventory there, and they'll be able to ramp that up faster than Atlee Buffalo declines. I've talked to him many times about Atlee Buffalo, and he says, you know, even when they stop adding new wells, as the polymers sweep through the reservoir, they will keep pushing more oil to the producers for several years before the well goes on decline, or before the field goes on decline. So anyway, it's not like, you know, oh, Atlee Buffalo's done, it's just going to roll over and go on decline. I don't think so. So they've got several years where they're going to be generating a lot of cash flow from that field.
So Dan, to your point about it can be a buyer's market for these companies that have cash when the underlying energy price is somewhat depressed and some companies get underwater or, quite frankly, they need to raise money. But that's one thing that really stands out to me with these energy companies is that they spend a lot of money maintaining production and some trying to grow production. And then their extra capital, they return to shareholders. Shareholders demand that sort of income. Are there any companies out there that you have noticed that actually hold back some of that cash, are building up their balance sheet so that they are better prepared for these market downturns to take advantage of lower or cheaper acquisitions?
Yeah, I'll tell you right now, all of our Sweet 16 companies are free cash flow positive at $60 oil.
But I mean, maintaining money. Anyone that's built up their balance sheet, I can't get over how many times I've seen free funds flows of $100 million and the balance sheet sitting there with $5 million.
Well, so you get cash flow. You have to be, you want to own companies that are building proven reserves and building production, and they're doing it with operating cash flow with some left over to pay dividends and buy back stock. That's exactly what Hemisphere is. And they have a great job at that, have great discipline. Now, if they're going to be constantly going out making acquisitions, just every couple months or announcing another deal, then they're never building. Well, I mean, if you're making good quality acquisitions that are immediately accretive, and a couple of our companies, Ring Energy has done that, made two or three acquisitions in a row, and all three of them were immediately accretive to their cash flow, that's fine. But I mean, what Hemisphere did to buy this raw acreage in Marston, that has to be developed before they start harvesting positive cash flow from that. But it's not a big, massive, you know, immediate tomorrow, we got to pump in $100 million or something. So I like that fact. The thing you need to look at on these companies now is, number one, first of all, you do look at the balance sheet and what is the situation on their debt. You know, do some of these companies have term debt that's, the term ends here in the next 6 months or 12 months? Yeah, they got a problem because maybe they're not going to be able to roll that debt forward. Then you look at their hedges. And first of all, a lot of the companies that do debt in this business, the debt holders typically make them hedge a lot of production. So a lot of the smaller caps that I've found, they've got really good hedges in place, so they don't have much exposure to the near-term, you know, oil price pulling back. Now, if oil goes to 50 next year, then that could be a problem, but I just really do not see that happening. For one thing, I don't think OPEC's going to let that happen. So that's another thing. But yeah, I mean, you got to look at, you know, what's their business plan? What's their growth plan? And, you know, that's what I kind of do, because I talk to them and I see what their 3-year plans, 5-year plans are, so I can build models to show how that's going to play out.
Well, Dan, speaking of small growth companies that have some free cash flow, another company that you brought up to us off mic, and this something we want to bring to people's attention, is Rubellite Energy. It's traded on the ticker RBY on the TSX. And this is a small junior upstream company, small cap growth, but you think that they've got some good free cash flow setting up as well. So talk to us about the value proposition in Rubellite Energy.
Okay. See, I had never heard of Rubellite. And then one of our members, that a guy named Harry, he's 70 years old. He's got 40, 50 years of experience in the energy industry. Really, really sharp guy. And anyway, he brought it to my attention when it popped into his top 10 picks. He follows 82 companies, and it's like his number 10 best value play. So I take a look at this. This is like 6-8 months ago, was the first time I looked at it. And actually, I asked Don Simmons if he knew anything about it. He says, yeah, I own their stock, because it's another heavy oil company like his is. And he knows the CEO and everything. And so I had her on a webinar on Monday, last Monday, the 21st. And if any of your listeners want to listen to the replay of that, because she did a really good job, it's a little over an hour, but she goes through in detail. What I really love what they've done. Late in 2024, in October, they closed one big acquisition. And then, let's see, at the end of August, they closed one big acquisition. And then in October, they actually merged back into the company that they were spun out of. It's, well, the company that spun them out is actually merging into, in a stock for stock deal, into Rubellite. It was called Perpetual Energy. And after both of these deals closed, they went from like 3,000 barrels a day to 12,000 barrels a day. And she told me they're, you know, as of the day we did the webinar, their production was over 12,200 BOE a day, about 70% heavy oil, And but they've got gas, and they're in that deep basin play, you know, where Peyto and those guys are in that deep basin play where they could ramp up gas production really fast. And she's bullish about that LNG export facility that's coming online on the west coast of Canada, supposed to be online by the end of June. And that alone should cause Western Canadian natural gas prices to start to catch up with US gas prices. And if that happens, this company's got a lot of potential. But it's really the majority of their revenues are going to be from oil production, but they also produce NGLs and natural gas. But it looks really, really good. And if any of your listeners, they want to send it, I'll send them the link to the replay. And we are going to do a profile on the company here pretty quick.
All right. Thanks for that offer there, Dan. And look, you even did bring up that aspect when you were talking about Hemisphere, about the dividend. And yes, I have received a few emails that wanted me to push back a little bit and say, yes, some of these companies with 10, 11% dividends, and then sometimes even special dividends at these lower energy prices, a lot of people assume that these dividends are at risk, especially the special dividends. But how can we go about analyzing companies to understand if a dividend is solid at, let's say, current oil prices, at in let's or even around $60 a barrel? And how do we also need to balance that out with the CapEx spending? Because as you said, they could wind down some of their CapEx spending, but again, to me, is that sustainable dividends?
Yeah, and the one thing with Hemisphere is too, they're aggressively buying back their own stock. So I think the first thing that would give is they'd stop buying back stock. They'd halt that program. So that would give more free cash flow to pay for the dividends. But and he has some hedges in place to protect the downside. He's got puts, he buys puts. So he keeps the upside, but he's protecting his downside with his hedging program. But yeah, you need to look at, you know, these, but you know, one way, join EPG. I mean, I prepare Excel spreadsheet forecasts that are macro driven, and all you have to do is go down to the bottom and change the assumptions for oil, gas, and NGL prices. Change the assumption for their production growth. If they say they're going to cut back and shut down their drilling program, you can just flatline their production or something, and it's real easy. I mean, in a matter of minutes, you can make those changes in the forecast assumptions, and it automatically updates their revenues, net income, and operating cash flow. And you can see if that operating cash flow covers their capital programs. So I think all of the companies that we have in our model portfolios that are upstream companies are all currently free cash flow positive. That's one of the things I really look for.
Yeah, Dan, just a comment on the work that you do. It's the write-ups that you do are fantastic, but also the spreadsheets are very helpful for working out your own valuations. You do a bang-up job at the Energy Prospectus Group, and I encourage people listening, if you follow the energy space, definitely get on Dan's list and start getting access to some of the information he shares with subscribers. One other company, we talked a lot about nat gas today. One other company that is a true gasser is Range Resources. It's traded on the ticker RRC. Now, we have talked about Range in the past, but it's one of the four gassers in your Sweet 16 growth portfolio. So not only are they going to capitalize if we see a higher nat gas price, but they've got growth on tap as well. Walk us through what you see with Range Resources,
Yeah,
Dan.
and I do own the stock, and I've been on board with them for over 20 years. Actually, Range Resources, I think it wasn't in the first Sweet 16. I started EPG in 2020, in 2003, and I think in 2004 it was in the Sweet 16. It's been there ever since. And first class, super conservative. They are given credit for discovering the Marcellus Shale. They were the first company to successfully drill and complete horizontal wells in the Marcellus Shale up in Pennsylvania, southwestern Pennsylvania. They own over 1 million acres. They have, like, I think yesterday in their conference call, they said they have 30 years of drilling inventory. And another thing they have is an outstanding marketing group. They have recently joined a consortium or joint venture with two other companies to start building these natural gas-fired power plants within the basin, within, you know, around Pittsburgh. Actually, Pittsburgh sits right on top of the heart of the Marcellus Shale, and they drill horizontally under the city, but they control a whole bunch of acreage that's held by production. Like they've gone on a pad, maybe a six-well pad, and they've completed two wells, one in each direction. Those two wells hold those leases forever. And so they've got hundreds and hundreds of development drilling locations that they can bring online quickly if they can just get the gas market to increase. But one of the problems is the gas pipelines coming out of the Appalachia area, which is, Pennsylvania, Eastern Ohio, and then the little northern part of West Virginia that sticks up in there has really good wells there too, is pipeline constrained. So this is great that they're going to start using it to generate electricity within the basin. And I think that's a really big improvement. And that's a big improvement for all of our companies that operate in there. But they announced first quarter results that just beat my forecast. I mean, they beat my free cash flow forecast by like $70 million. And the reason why is because of their good marketing group, they got higher realized prices. When I say realized price, that includes the regional differentials for quality or BTU content and also the cash settlements on their hedges. They have a really good hedging program. And so they got higher prices for their gas, higher prices for their NGLs, and higher prices for their oil than I was using in my forecast model. So they beat the forecast like crazy. And they're really in good shape. Now, gas prices in the second quarter will pull back a little bit, but they're cushioned by some of their hedges in there. And then they're just in great shape for heading into the year end. And they in their presentation yesterday said their 3-year plan is to increase their gas production by 400 million cubic feet a day. So over the next 3 years, which is a very nice revenue stream.
Okay. Dan, the one thing I'm hearing from you quite regularly is check out these companies' hedges too. Just see how protected they are to the downside. But hey, Dan, great having you on the show. Again, Dan Steffens, president of the Energy Prospectus Group. Be sure to reach out to Dan, read over his reports, and sign up for the Energy Prospectus Group if you are invested or just interested in investing in the individual names in the energy sector, oil and gas. Everyone, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. Just as a reminder, please go back through our website, podcast, YouTube channel, and Substack. Just search The KE Report. You can stay up to date with all our daily editorials, company updates covering the market moves day after day, and any key news out of a lot of the resource companies that we follow. Dan, again, thank you very much for your time. And everyone, thanks for tuning in this weekend. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
The Corlin Economics Report is produced for A.B. Corlin and Associates. Opinions expressed on this program are intended solely for the entertainment of our listeners, do not constitute investment advice, and are not necessarily those of this network, radio station, or our sponsors. Find out more about this program and today's guests by visiting www.kereport.com. For Al Corlin, this is Colleen Robbins. Join us again next week for the Corlin Economics Report.